Right, morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma, daf Chav Gimel, we're in Chav Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara got into a discussion regarding the counting of the Jewish people, the prohibition of counting the Jewish people, I should say. And the reason why the Gemara got into that prohibition is because of our Mishnah. We started yesterday the second Mishnah, the second Perek of Masechta Yuma. Within that, the Mishnah told us how we do a pious, how we do a lottery. We learned a little history lesson, and actually today we're going to learn a little bit more of this particular history, and that originally how was it settled that which Kohen was going to do the Truma Sedeshin. We discussed yesterday, each week you have a Mishmar working in the base of Mikdash, 24 Mishmars of the Kohanim. All the Kohanim work up into 24 families. Of those 24 families, each Mishmar gets to work 1 week, and within that week, each Mishmar is then broken up into a base of, into a subcategory, a subset. So that was from Sunday through Friday, 6 days of the week. So there are six Bati Avos, there are six families who are working in the Beis HaMikdash. Even within each Beis Av, there's still multiple Kohanim. How is it determined? Who decides who gets to do the Truma Sedeshin? Answer, first one who gets there in the morning, first one who's fresh out of bed and ready to do the Avodah, he'll be able to do the Truma Sedeshin. The first Avodah that's done every day in the Beis HaMikdash. We discussed yesterday, what if there's more than one person coming? So the original way to settle that was through a foot race. A foot race up the ramp, starting at the bottom, ending somewhere towards the top, exactly where the Gemara asked the question yesterday. We don't know with pinpoint precision. But anyway, as you get to about four amas from the top of the ramp, so that's the finish line, and that will be the determinant in terms of who's going to be doing the avodah. The Mishnah yesterday told us a story, although today we're going to learn a second story, which is even more tragic, about how as they were running up, they saw that it was going to be a tie, and one pushed the other off the ramp and broke a leg. And so then they started resolving all of these issues with a lottery, with a pious. Okay, that's what we discussed yesterday. And the pious was exactly as the lottery. So the Kohanim form a circle. They stick out a finger or two fingers and they start counting. And they start counting each one of the Kohanim with a random number selected by the Mamuna. And that is going to be the determinant in terms of who exactly is going to be the one doing the Truma Sedeshin in the morning. Okay, and we're counting fingers. Why aren't we counting people? What's the big issue? So that's where the Gemara then got into the discussion yesterday. It is a big issue. You're not allowed to count people. You can only count hats, fingers. Some people count beards. that only works in some communities. It doesn't work in every community. So, okay. But you can't count people. Now, it's interesting, a couple of interesting things we noted yesterday. Number one, the Gemara quotes Psukim, it speaks to this issue, but the Gemara doesn't quote Psukim in Torah. Meaning we have in Parshas Kisisa, the Torah says, when you count the Jewish people, everyone has to give a machzis a shekel. So that could have been a very easy source to teach us that you're not allowed to count the Jewish people. The Gemara does not do that. The Gemara goes to Shmuel Aleph and learns from Shaul when he started counting the Jewish people for warfare. So we suggested yesterday, maybe that the reason why the Gemara doesn't quote the Pasuk in Kisisa says because even if it's a Dvar Mitzvah, even if you're counting for a good reason, meaning there's a purpose to my counting, like in other words, we're going to war, I need to know how many soldiers we are, even then it's still going to be a prohibition to count, and that's why the Gemara turned to the Pesukim in Shmuel and not to the Pesukim in the Chumash. Okay, that's a possibility we pointed out yesterday. Fine. Why are you not allowed to count? So one suggestion we talked about yesterday is it's a Mar Sinai issue. You start counting, you start now numbering actually how many Jews there are. So it's a Mar Sinai issue. Another issue could be that when you're counting, then you're going to be basically breaking up the Jewish people into individual units. We work much better as a group than we do as individuals. As individuals, we expose ourselves, we open ourselves to closer scrutiny. As a mass, we basically are now approaching the Kadosh Baruch Hu as one entity, as a singular entity. And so that's perhaps another reason why there's a prohibition in counting. Okay, all this we discussed yesterday, and we almost finished the daf yesterday. Not quite, we are on Chav Beis Amud Beis. And we're going to start today from Amar Rav Huna. The Gemara, as long as we were quoting Pesukim and Shmuel, so then we digressed yesterday to the discussion of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech started getting philosophical when he was instructed, let's go kill Amalek. Right? Shmuel says to Shaul, okay, you're the king now. Job of the king, extinguish, exterminate Amalek. So then he started getting philosophical. For really, I'm supposed to kill everybody, the men, the women, the children, the animals, I'm supposed to do all that. And so he couldn't, it was hard, it was difficult for him. And the Gemara quoted the Pasuk from Koheles, the Pasuk in Koheles says, Al ti tzadik harbei. Shaul, you're being overly righteous. And then when it comes to Kohanim Yirnov, where he decimated the entire city for harboring a fugitive, and that fugitive was David HaMelech, So he killed the entire city, and then we go to the flip side of the pasuk in Kohelet, which is Al Tarshia Harbe. Mm-hmm. Well, don't now you're being too much of Russia. And I saw in the notes and some of the Rishonim, not on the daf, but point out that they go hand in hand, meaning that if you're off balance on your tzidkus, you're going to be off balance on your rishas, meaning that you have to strike a balance between a tzaddik and a rasha. And so this is by Shaul, it went in both directions, meaning he tried to be too much of a tzaddik, which ended up becoming too much of a rasha. Okay, Amar Rav Huna, this is where we left off yesterday. We're right in the middle of the Amar Chav Beis Amud Beis, and it is the second wide line on the Amud. It's right in the middle of the line. Amar Rav Huna Kamalo Chali V'lo Margish Gavra Demarisiaya. There's this idea called Siyata Dishmaya, okay, divine help, right? Hard to pin it down, hard to put exactly into terms what exactly that is, so I'm not going to try to, I'm not going to attempt to, but there's an idea called Siyata Dishmaya, popular song some 20-some-odd years ago, but sung by a friend of mine, but nevertheless, so it's okay, it's just an idea, it's a concept of Siyata Dishmaya. So the Gemara says it's good to have Siyata Dishmaya, right? A person doesn't get sick, this is Rav Huna saying, a person doesn't get sick, he doesn't have any type of stress. For the individual, has Siyaya, the Maya de Siyaya, he has assistance, divine assistance. So Shaul Ba'achaz Va'altalo, David B'shtayim Va'altalo, look, Shaul, so he had one chait, and already that was it, done. Right, so he's finished, and David HaMelech sinned twice, and somehow lo alto lo didn't count towards him. Now, as the Rishonim point out, you're not going to see this on Rashi and Tosfos over here, but the other Rishonim point out, and again, I saw this in notes, I saw this in Rabbi Kornfeld. In other words, the Gemara over here is not having a discussion of schar va'onish, meaning reward and punishment. It's one of the pillars of Yadus is that everything gets rewarded and punished accordingly. There's no escaping that. The Gemara over here is just saying, from our perspective, from the way we're looking at things, it looks like Shaul just messed up one time. That was it. He was done. David messed up twice, although, as the Gemara is going to point out, it seems like it's more than twice, but okay, the Gemara is going to deal with that in just a second. And meanwhile, from our perspective, the way it looks to us, David HaMelech looks like he escaped both. Now, Shaul Ba'achaz Ma'i, so the Gemara is going to go through each one. So let's first investigate Shaul. So Ma'isa Da'agak, so there's not much to investigate. We know right in the middle of Shmuel Aleph, so Shaul was instructed by Shmuel Hanavi to go in to decimate the Amalek, and he didn't do so. And he let the king of Amalek survive, that's Agag. And before Shmuel got to finish the job, so Agag had a child, years later we have Haman. So in other words, but he messed up. In other words, he should have exterminated everybody. He didn't. He had Rachmanus, like the Gemara earlier just discussed. And that was bad. And as a result of that, Shmuel says to Shaul, you're done, meaning you're no longer the king. Okay, so one chait, and that was it. Altalo. Now, ha'ika ma'isa denov yar kohanim. The Gemara says, okay, it seems to be that we're missing a big chait of Shaul. He exterminated an entire city of Nov, yar kohanim. So, ha'maisa da'aga ksiv, nicham tiki imlachti es Shaul. Okay, so Gemara says, of course, you're right, but it's clear that after the incident of Amalek and Agag, that was it, he was done. Meaning, yes, he sinned later on as well, but in terms of Kadosh Baruch Hu taking him to task, after the one sin, Kadosh Baruch Hu said, via Shmuel, through Shmuel, you're done. You're no longer the king. Good. So, Lamelech David, so I'm sorry, Ki Yimlach Yishol Lamelech. David Bishtayim, Mahi, so the Gemara now says, what about David HaMelech? So there was two sins that didn't seem to count against him. So Uriah of Uda Hasata, so it's the sin of Uriah and the sin of Hasata. Now the sin of Uriah, I think we're all familiar with, and the sin of Hasata, what is that? That's the end of David's reign, where basically he was asked to take a census of the Jewish people, and he did. He counted the Jewish people, which of course fits in also to this daf, because we just learned on this daf that you're not allowed to do that. And David HaMelech was basically, the word hasis means he was cajoled, he was persuaded to count the Jewish people. So the Gemara says, those are the two sins of David, and it doesn't seem to go against him. Meaning he's never taken to task for those two sins. Now, v'haikanami ma'isa de Batsheva, the Gemara says, what about Batsheva? Now, it's interesting. The Gemara here divides Uri and Batsheva. Meaning we see it all as one story, but the Gemara says, but yes, it's one story, but two different infractions. One infraction, if we're allowed to say this. One infraction is vis-a-vis Uri, where he instructed Uri to go front line. And the other one is Batsheva, where he has relations with Batsheva. The Gemara sees it as two, even though it's part of one story. So the Gemara says, what about the incident of Batsheva? Hasam Yifru Minei Dechziv. So the Gemara says no, because our discussion over here is lo alta lo, meaning we're discussing things where he was chote and he got away with it. Again, that's not the right language. I'm not saying it correctly, but you understand it didn't count. It doesn't seem to count against him. So Bat Sheva, that counted against him. The Gemara says, in fact, he paid for it dearly. You're going to pay four times for the kivsa. Remember, the Navi goes over to Dovin HaMelech after the incident and basically gives him a parable of a poor man and the sheep, and someone takes the sheep, and the Navi says to Dovin, what are we supposed to do with that guy who takes away the sheep? So David says, well, you know, in other words, he has to pay for it. So the Navi says, yeah, well, that's you. Right? You took the kivsa. The kivsa was a mashal, was an analogy. So the Gemara says, and as the kivsa yishalem mar basam, you have to pay fourfold for the sheep that you stole. Right? So almost like the din of dalav v'hei. Right? You have to pay four times the amount. Now what is his payment? Meaning, how does he actually suffer for the act of Batsheva? So the Gemara quickly, just in four words, enumerates the four things he had to undergo over the course of his life because of the incident of Batsheva. Number one is Yaled. They lost their first child, Adavin and Batsheva. That when they had relations, she conceived and she was pregnant. That child did not make it. Number two, Amnon. The incident of Amnon and Tamar. Actually, it's Amnon and Tamar is two and three. Now, Tamar was one of his daughters. Tamar was raped. Tamar was raped by Amnon, who was her brother. Okay, I understand brother and sister, not for now. Meaning, on another occasion, we'll have an opportunity to discuss how that could possibly be. But Amnon raped Tamar, so Tamar was a victim of rape. And Amnon, as a result of what he did, so he was killed by Avshalom, if I remember correctly. So Amnon and Tamar, and finally Avshalom staged a rebellion against David HaMelech. So all those four calamities that took place in the life of David HaMelech, or was there a result of Batsheva? So to say lo alta lo by Batsheva, that's not plausible, as clearly Kadosh Baruch Hu took him to task for that. So the Gemara says, Hasam nami fruminei dechsiv veiten Hashem dever ve'ad es moed. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's go back to the census. Right, David HaMelech at the end of his rule, so he took a census of the Jewish people. And what the Gemara is trying to argue now is lo alta lo. Seems that David HaMelech got away with it, meaning he did something wrong, and it wasn't counted against him. Gemara says, what are you talking about? There was a plague that the Jewish people suffered for the Navi says for a number of months. And so you're telling me that lo alta lo, David didn't suffer? So the Gemara says, hasam lo ifru megufe, hasam not me. I'm sorry, hasam lo ifru megufe. So the Gemara says, yeah, but David didn't personally suffer. Meaning, yeah, the Jewish people had to pay ramifications for it, but him on a personal level, he didn't have to suffer. So hasam not me lo ifru megufe. So the Gemara says, okay, but if you go back to the story about Sheva, and even if you look at the four punishments that were suffered, they weren't personal sufferings on him. They were external, obviously affecting him, obviously emotionally affecting him, but they weren't personal yusurim. So the La'ai Yifru Migufe, the Gemara says, no, it's not true. After the incident of Batsheva, he also was personally punished as well. Damar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Shisha Chadashim, Nitzara Davidu Parshu Heimenu Sanhedrin, Mistako Heimenu Shechina. So the Gemara says that for 6 months, after the episode of Batsheva, David was afflicted with Saras, Sanhedrin was removed from him, Shechina was removed from him, Dechsiv Yashivu Liyarecha V'yodu Edosecha, Gemara quotes a pasuk from Tehillim, he was asking the Shechina to please come back to him, Uksiv Yashivu Li Sason Yishecha, I want Sason to come back. Sason is a state of Nevuah, it's a state of divine inspiration, and he was asking for that to come back because it went away, and the reason why it went away is because of the incident of Batsheva. Okay, so the Gemara is arguing, no, that even after the incident of Batsheva, he had personal yisurim as well. Tosfos is by the very simple question. If this is true, so then it comes out that the pasuk of Arba Asayim, Yishalem Arba Asayim, he paid back fourfold, it's no longer fourfold. It's now more than fourfold. It's the four we just mentioned. It's Yelad, Amnon, Tamar, and Avshalom. Plus also the Tzaras, he also was afflicted with leprosy. Tosfos is bothered by that. You can see Tosfos, second Tosfos on the Amud, who tries to resolve that issue.
Huh? How could he function as a...
Right, so, right, for, correct, as a Mitzorah, as somebody who is... who's censored and secluded. Okay, it's fine. The Amar of Yehuda, okay, fine. So, Vaha Amar Rav, okay, fine. All right, so where are we right now? So we're back to where we started, meaning Shaul sinned once, altalo, it counted against him. That was by Agag, Amalek, and he lost his ability to rule as a result of that. David shtayim lo altalo, and the Gemara maintains that this is so, that David twice he sinned and it didn't seem to count against him. One is by Uriah, and the other is by him taking a census of the Jewish people at the end of his reign. So the Gemara says, what about the fact that David accepted Lashon Hara? Gemara here is referencing David regarding Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was the only descendant of Shaul. Shaul was killed, as to all of his sons were as well, and there was only one surviving descendant, and that's Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth, David basically took care of him. He was the son of Yehonasan, and David and Yehonasan were the best of friends, and so David basically said, okay, I'll take care of Mephibosheth, and he does so. But, however, there was a bad rumor that circulated about Mephibosheth, circulated by an Eved, a slave, and his name was Siva. And he started circulating rumors about Mephibosheth, that Mephibosheth was actually supporting the rebellion against David HaMelech. That was the Lashon Hara spoken by Tziva about Mephibosheth. So the Gemara says, and David accepted Lashon Hara, so that should also be counted against David. So the Gemara says, Kishmol Dama Lo Kibala David Lashon Hara. So the Gemara says, well, whether or not he accepted Lashon Hara, that's somewhat of a debate amongst the Amoraim, machlokes between Shmuel and Rav. And the Gemara says, we could just simply sidestep the issue by saying that we hold like Shmuel, that he didn't accept Lashon Hara. Or Rav Nami Damar Kibal David Lashon Hara, he threw me nay. And even if we accept Rav's position that he was Mekabal Lashon Hara, it could very well be that he was punished. The Amar of Yudah Amar Rav Bishar Shamal Odavel Mephibosheth Amati Atav V'tivat Tachlokas Asadem. Meaning, what was David's compromise? Meaning, when he heard the report about Mephibosheth, and then he actually meets Mephibosheth, and he doesn't know whether Mephibosheth was in fact part of the rebellion or not part of the rebellion, so David comes up with a compromise. And he says, okay, Tziva, Mephibosheth, I know I promised an entire piece of land to Mephibosheth, you and Tziva are going to divide it. Okay, that was his compromise. Unsure whether or not Mephibosheth was part of the rebellion or not. So Yatza Baskal V'Amra, so now, as a result of David dividing the estate, so the Baskal comes out and says, "Rechavim v'yerav v'yachlokus amalchus." The kingdom in the future is going to be divided. Not that long into the future. Meaning, we're talking about Rechavim, the grandson of David, right, the son of Shlomo. So the kingdom was divided as a result of David's compromise, and David's compromise was predicated on the fact that David was mekabel lashon hara. Okay, ben shana Shaul b'malko. All right, couple more drashas, and we will move on in the Mishnah. But a couple more drashas. We're still in Shmuel. We stay in Shmuel. Stay for Shmuel. Ben Shana Shalom b'malko. So Shal was Ben Shana. Now, it does not mean that he was a year old, but it sounds that way. Amar Avuna ke Ben Shana Shalom tam chet. So Shal was pristine, meaning he never sinned. He was good, right? Good from when he ruled, he was like a one-year-old. A one-year-old has no chataim, has no sins to account for. He's just not held accountable for anything he does. So, okay, so that was Shaul. So, Maskev
Rav... incident with the whole, Amalek that he didn't kill
him. Oh, that's later, meaning...
Just that first
thing? No, right. That, in other words, when he was appointed as the king, he was Keben Shana. So Amr Sarav Nachma Yitzchak Ve'ema Keben Shana Shemeluch Lach Betit Uvitzawa. So Rav Nachma Yitzchak says, look, if you want to darshan, I mean, you could darshan the other way as well. I mean, you can say it's like a one-year-old. A one-year-old, so not toilet trained, so covered in his own excrement. So, I mean, can't you say that about Shaul? Now, even in the world of Drush, meaning you can go in a number of directions, but you got to be careful about how you speak. And the idea of what Rav Nachman Yitzchak is suggesting is that maybe that's what the pasuk means regarding Shaul. And listen to how he's talking about Shaul. Achvele Rav Nachman siyuta bechalmei. Rav Nachman went to bed that night and he did not have good dreams. He was nightmares. He was haunted in his dreams. He was attacked by siyuta. Rashi describes the siyuta as where's the Rashi? I know I'm going to find it. Malachi Pachan Mavila Moso. Right? Demonic angels. Who are just, in other words, he was getting nightmares at night. Amar nei nesig lachem atzam Shaul ben Kish. And he realizes, he recognizes, this is the way I spoke about Shaul. I should not be speaking about Shaul that way. Nei nesi. I humble myself in front of Shaul. I apologize. So, now, even with an apology, it didn't help. He went to bed that night and once again plagued with these frightening dreams. Amar nei nesig lachem atzam Shaul ben Kish melech Yisrael. So, but then he realized what his mistake was, even in his apology. Could have been a better apology. Could have been a more sincere apology. Second time around, he gave a better apology. What did he add in the apology? Melech Yisrael. Meaning, right, you're the king of the Jewish people. And he added kavod to it. So then, presumably, the Gemara doesn't tell us, but presumably, all was well between Rav Nachman and Shaul. I'm Rav Yehuda Shmuel, Mimnei Malonim Shechamachus Beis Shaul. Why was Beis Shaul's Malchus not lasting? Now, we could give the simple answer because he's not from Shevet Yehuda. Okay, we could give that answer, but the Gemara is going to attack this from a different angle. Mimnei shelo haya bo shum dofi. So the Gemara says, you know why? Because he was perfect. Can you imagine? Right? Unbelievable insight of the Gemara coming up right now. He was perfect. He didn't have any shum dofi. Dofi over here means duplicitous, meaning that unfortunately, with some of us, I'll speak about myself, because it's easier to talk that way. So there's, in other words, there's an inconsistency. By Shaul HaMelech, there was simply no consistency. So the Amr of Yochanan, Mishom, Rabbi Shimon, and Yosedek, Ein Ma'amidim, Parnas, Al Tzibur, Elim, Kein Kupa, Shoshrasim, Tulu, Yolom, Yachora. Okay, skeletons in the closet. Okay, and the Gemara's language over here, the expression is almost identical to what we have. We call skeletons in the closet. The Gemara here refers to this Kupa, Shoshrasim, right? A box of bugs. Okay, but basically the same idea. Meaning you need to have a skeleton in your closet. Now, you don't like when the skeletons come out, and you don't like when people see what's in the skeleton in the closet, but it keeps you in check. You're humble. You realize, in other words, I shouldn't make myself arrogant and haughty, because look what's following me all the time. Look at all the skeletons in my closet. The Gemara says, that's the kind of leader you want. I know it's not intuitive, but that's the kind of leader you want. Because anytime you get arrogant, so people tap you on the shoulder and say, wait 1 second, turn around. You want to take a look behind you? See what you're carrying behind you? So it basically keeps your ego in check. And the Gemara says, and that was the problem by Shaul HaMelech. He was so perfect, there was nothing to keep his ego in check. And I guess we'll fill you can fill in the blank. In terms of what happened to his ego, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav Mimnei Manana Shaul Mimnei Shemachal Al Kvodo. Now, the reason why Shaul was punished because he was Mochel Al Kvodo, he forgave. Again, a second counterintuitive point: forgiving. I thought forgiving is a good thing. Gemara says not when you're the king. When you're the king, you don't forgive. The Gemara over here is quoting the Psukim from Shmuel Aleph, very briefly, but basically, one of the first campaigns that was run by Shaul against the Ammonites, and he was successful, but there were a lot of harsh critics there. And if you take a look at Rashi, the last Rashi in the Amud, so Rashi, Maskana de Milsa, Shama Yisrael, Miha Omer Shaul Yimloch Aleinu. Right? Is Shaul going to rule over us? So these are the critics. Hanashim and Nimisim Vuhu Amar Lo Yumos Isha Yomazeh. The question was asked to Shaul, what do we do about these critics who basically are questioning your Malchus? So Shaul's response is, now let it go. And as a king, that should not be your response. You should not let it go. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Yotzer called Tamar Chacham She'eno Nokem and Oter Kenachash Eino Tamar Chacham. Gemara says something which to us may at first seem, again, something that strikes us as an inconsistent behavior of a Tamar Chacham. The Gemara says when you're a Tamar Chacham and if you don't take vengeance and hold a grudge like a snake, like a nachash, ain't a Tamar Chacham, you're not a Tamar Chacham. You're worth your weight in salt as a Tamar Chacham. You need to be Nokem, and you need to be Noter, you need to take revenge, and you need to hold a grudge. The Gemara says, V'haksiv, now that's difficult, because the Torah says, Lo sikom v'lo sitor. Meanwhile, the Torah says, you're not allowed to take revenge, you're not allowed to hold a grudge. So it's a little bit strange, and we're telling the Tamar Chacham that's the way you have to behave. So the Gemara says, "Ha'u b'mamon hu dichsiv." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, of course the Torah says lo sikom v'lo sitor. on monetary matters, losi kum velosi tor. Don't take revenge, don't hold a grudge. We're going to give examples in just a second. But when it comes to your kavod, avatam chacham, right? Tam chacham is representing the Torah. So when his honor gets offended, it's not his honor. It's the Torah's honor. He's a representation of the Torah. So a Tam Chacham was representing the Torah. So him to get offended, him to get slighted. So the Gemara says, now you're no longer just representing yourself, you're representing Torah. So the Gemara says, no kivinatira. You need to take revenge. You need to hold a grudge. And the same thing is true regarding the king. Meaning as a king, you're not just a person. You're representing. You're a symbol. So now, if somebody says something against you, so as a personal matter, I guess you can let it slide. But as the king of the Jewish people, you cannot let it slide. Okay, so that's the Gemara as it lays out. What about the Isser and the Torah of Lo Sikam Velo Sitor? That's vis-a-vis money. That's monetary matters. First of all, how does the Gemara know that? The Gemara doesn't explain how it knows that. How does it know that? So the Sefer Yerayim writes, Sefer Yerayim is a Talmud of Rabbeinu Tam. So he writes context, like the answer to so many issues. Meaning, if you look in the Torah where it says, Lo Sikam Velo Sitor, found at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, you're going to look what surrounds it, and what surrounds it is all a series of monetary law. So if you look contextually in the Torah, you will see that Lo Sikam Velo Sitor is surrounded by monetary law. So that's how the Gemara knows that Lo Sikam Velo Sitor is limited to monetary matters. Examples of Lo Sikam Velo Sitor, not to take revenge, not to hold a grudge, Tanya. We learned on the Brayse, Ezu Nekima, Ezu Netir Nekima, Amar Lo Hashulein Magalech. For example, I say, would you lend me your Magal, your saw? Amar Lo Lav. So he says, no. No. And for no good reason, meaning with no explanation, no rationalization, just no, not interested. Now the next day, he goes over and says, can I borrow your kardom? Your axe. So no. In other words, remember, yesterday you lent me your saw. Today I'm not lending you my axe. That's nekima. That's revenge. Okay? And that's my monetary law. Now what's an example of holding a grudge? So again, we start off with a similar beginning. I'd like to borrow your kardom. So Amar Leilo says no. Lamach Amar Leilo Shleni Chalukech. Next day, the other person says, can I borrow your shirt? I'm alone. Hey, lech. Here's my shirt. And you know, just to remind you, I'm not like you. Meaning, you didn't lend me, but I'll lend you. Uh-huh. So in other words, and that's holding a grudge. And that's Natira. Zui Natira. Okay. Not Adkan, but in other words, good. So those are examples of Nekima Natira. That's by monetary law. But when it comes to Tamach Chacham, so he needs to... he needs to hold the grudge. He needs to take revenge. So the Gemara says, but you're really supposed to take it out on the other person? Meaning, if it's not monetary law, and you're Talmid Chacham, you're really supposed to let it out on somebody else? The Gemara says, you accept embarrassment, you don't embarrass others. You listen to your disgrace and you don't respond. You do things out of love and out of simcha, and you accept the suffering, you accept the punishment. You're like the sun rising. Meaning, it's good to be degraded and not respond. It's good to be embarrassed and not respond. So the Gemara says, so how can you tell me that the process and the procedure of a Talmid Chacham is to take revenge and to hold a grudge? Answers the Gemara, La'olam denakale belibe. The Gemara says, outwardly, don't do anything, but remember. Meaning, don't let it slide. You're Talmid Chacham, and someone slighted you, and the Torah. So to physically take it out on the other person, or to verbally attack the other person, that no. But to remember what he did, the Gemara says that yes. So the Gemara says, yeah, but what about the statement of Rava? Rava says, you let things slide, Akash Baruch Hu lets things slide. Meaning, you forgive others, Kadosh Baruch Hu forgives you. Right? So, you're telling me you're supposed to remember? So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, no. The statement of Rava is when he actually apologizes to you. In other words, a person slights you. And he comes over and he apologizes, forgive him. Don't wait, don't delay, forgive him. But if he slights you and he doesn't apologize, so then, no came v'no ter kenachash. So then remember and don't take it mildly. Okay. There is a Gemara in Megillah. I saw this when Rabbi Kornfeld discussed this. There is a Gemara in Megillah. Mar Zutra, every time he went to bed, you know what he said? Megillah and Daf Chav Ches. It's toward the end of the Masechta. He says, "Hareini Mochel, I forgive anybody who did anything to me today." And in some Sidurim, so they write in the Kriya Shema Lamita, so they take the statement of Mar Zutra and they insert it in. So it's a little bit difficult because the practice of Mar Zutra seems to be that he forgave everybody. And our Gemara says, no, as a Talmud Chacham, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to forgive everybody. Somebody apologizes to you, then you forgive him right away. But if they don't apologize, so our Gemara says you don't forgive him. And so it seems to be somewhat of a discrepancy.
But the definition of Talmud Chacham is a pretty narrow definition.
I understand that, but you're right. But I would like to assume that Mar Zutra fits into that definition.
Right,
right. Okay.
I think it's better to say that the private
right,
matter,
no, I agree with you.
Private matter, he forgave.
Right, that's the that's the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah goes with that approach. Okay, very good. Okay, we're back to the Mishnah. Okay. Umahin motzien achas v'shtein. How many fingers will they take out? I was corrected yesterday. I said that if a person sticks out two fingers, he's counted as two. The Gemara over here says no. That's not correct. That's not accurate. So umahin motzien achas v'shtein. Ha shashtein motzien achas mibaye. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? If you stick out two, you can't stick out one. Amar chista lokashe kam bebari kam becholah. So the Gemara says the difference between sticking out two or one fingers is just a question of dexterity, your physical ability. Meaning some people have enough coordination, enough motor skill where they could stick out one finger. Most of us. But some people are chola, the Gemara describes. It's interesting. You're a chola, what are you doing the avoda? I mean, if you don't have enough dexterity, yeah, correct. If you don't have enough dexterity to hold out one finger, not two, so you're in a position to do the avoda, okay, that's my question. Maybe it's not good, but okay. But still, but for that person, so he's going to hold out two fingers. But still, in other words, we're really just counting hands because we're just counting kohanim.
Put out a fist.
Okay.
So what's the problem with the
Hatanya, we'll get to that. The Gemara is going to ask your question. The Hatanya achas motzim shtayim. Achas motzim shtayim motzim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but we have a tosefta says that you stick out one, not two. But medvar mamor bebari. The Gemara says, yeah, if you're healthy, so really the best thing to do is to stick out one. Remember, the whole point of the finger is that your person doesn't get counted. Mm-hmm. Meaning we don't want to count people. So we want something that represents you. So the finger is it's a digit, it's an extremity, it's not you. Okay, so that's why the best thing to do is just stick out a finger. But if you're sick, meaning you don't have enough dexterity, enough coordination, so then you need to stick out two, so stick out two. Now individuals stick out two, but even if they stick out two, they're only counted as one. The Gemara says, but what about the Braisa? You can't stick out your third finger, and the logo, you can't stick out your thumb, because we're worried about people who deceive. Now, if you stick out a third finger, okay, we'll count you. But if you stick out your thumb, ain mon lo, we're simply not going to count you. And not only that, but you have the audacity to stick out your thumb when they told you not to. So you're subject to a whipping, malchus, right? Bipikia are lashes. My monim lo nami. So my monim lo nami achas. So the Gemara says, even if you stick out three, and even if it means you're counted, you only counted as one. So my pikia, the Gemara says, just in terms of the whip, I'm Rav Marda. So Rav says that the pikia is a reference to Marda. My Marda, the Gemara says, okay, a little more help. I'm Rav Papa, metarka detaya, depasik reshe. Here, psik reshe over here is used not in the general context that we know. It's basically describing the whip of an Arab, who's, when you get to the end of the whip, it frays. It's like little strings at the end, and obviously to make the whipping slightly more painful. Amar Abai Mereshav Amina Hadidnan. So Abai says, now that we know that the Pekiah is a reference to a whip, we'll go back to the Mishnah Shkalim, we'll revisit our understanding of the Mishnah Shkalim. The Mishnah Shkalim says, Ben Bivi Mamun ala Pekiah. Ben Bivi was appointed over the Pekiah. Now remember how we understood that back in Shkalim? I thought it meant the wicks that were used for the menorah. And there was a certain amount of expertise and mathematics that were involved in the wicks, because you had to know thickness of the wick, length of the night, how long it's going to last. That's what we thought Pekiya meant. Now we're going to say a new pshat. I'm in a psilta. So I said, this is Rav Papa talking, sorry, Abaye talking, I said it was psilta. They would take old clothing of the Kohanim, right, made out of linen, and basically worn clothing, recycling. This is the original recycling, and basically use the old clothing as wicks. But now that I know the Braisa says Abaye, the Braisa over here that describes the whipping of the Kohanim who had disrespect and audacity and were sticking out the thumb when told not to, and they were whipped with this thing called the Pekiya. I mean, my Pekiya and Nagda. So now I'm going to say Nupsha in the Mishnah Shkalim. That the Pekiya, they were basically the policemen, the shoter of the Beis Hamikdash. If somebody needed a whipping, so we called them Ben Bivi. So a Nupsha in the Mishnah Shkalim. Okay. We learned yesterday that originally the determinant of who's going to do the Trumas Hadeshin is going to be a foot race, up the ramp, whoever gets there first. And the Mishnah talks of a tragedy where, as they were getting up and they saw that one was not going to beat the other, he pushed them off the ramp. Okay. That's what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah, and that will pale in comparison to the Tosefta we're about to read. Tanu Rabbanan. We're seeing together now a Tosefta. So one person beat the other. Now, we speak about sore losers in general. This one may take the cake. Now, so he takes the knife and sticks it into his heart. So in other words, he stabs him. And as we'll see in just a moment, stabs him to death. Rabbi Tzadok stands on the steps of the Ulam. That's the antechamber. That's the entrance to the Beis HaMikdash. V'amar. Achenu Beis Yisrael shamu harehu omer. Ki yimtza chalal ba'adamah v'yatsu zekenecha v'shoftecha. If we have ki matza chalal ba'adamah, if we find a murder victim and we don't know who did it, so the Torah says we have to go through the ceremony of the Agla Rufa and the procedure, and we're responsible over a murder victim. Anu amila havi agla rufa alair ala zaros. So who's gonna be responsible for this agla arufa? He's saying as if there's actually an agla rufa that needs to be brought. Now, a number of you, and hopefully all of you in this room, are going to think, no, this is not a place for an agla rufa. But right now, don't get caught up in the halacha. Okay, yeah. Now's not the time to put on your Gemara cup, although that's normally what we do when we're here. But now's not the time. Go kol ha'am bebechiyah. So and the nation was wailing, meaning it really incited the people to emotion. So ba avish shaltina komatsu kishuma farper. Now the father comes and sees his child as the child is dying, not dead yet, but dying. Ama hareu ke hareu kaparaschem. Right, this should serve as a kapara. My son's still, no, he's not even dead yet. And so, but what he wanted to do is, he wanted to remove the knife out of his son so that the knife doesn't become tame. Because if the knife were still connected, inserted into the body while the body was dead, after the body died, so then this knife is now an avi avos atumah, and it's not just an avatumah, it's a knife, it's a halal, right? Cherev harei kachalal, the knife has a status of avi avos atumah, to save from the tumah. So the father of the victim removed the knife prior to the actual death, to the moment of death. Lo lamdecha shekasha aleihem taras kelim yoser mishvichos damim, and the incident tells us that for them, in terms of their their priorities, so they put taras kelim above shvichos damim. V'cheinu amr v'gam dam naki shafach menashe harbei ma'od ad asher mileis Yerushalayim po lepo. And we quoted this pasuk earlier in the Masechta. Menashe, the son of Chizkiyahu, so he was engrossed in Shvichas Damim. A lot of Shvichas Damim takes place under his watch. The Gemara, all the way back on Daf Tes, said, why was the first Beis HaMikdash destroyed? The destruction as a result of Shvichas Damim, one of the incidents. Okay. Now, we're going to come back to, in just a second, the Egla Rufa, and he says, who's going to bring the Egla Rufa, as if it was a halachic consideration. We'll come back to that in just a moment. In the meantime, however, we have two episodes that takes place in the Beis HaMikdash. One, our Mishnah described to us, which is the pushing off of one kohen off the ramp, which resulted in a broken leg, and here the stabbing of a kohen, which resulted in death. Hai Maisa Kadim. You might ask a very simple question. Assuming these two incidents occurred, which one came first? So the Gemara says it's hard to imagine that the death came before the broken leg, because they didn't respond with any type of enactment after death, and after a broken leg, oh, now it's time to make a takana. That's hard to imagine. So Allah Dinishba Raglo Kadim became the Tekina Paisa Arba Amos Mayavidatayu. So the Gemara says, okay, so the broken leg came first. But the broken leg came first, what our Mishnah tell us? That as a reaction to the broken leg, they had pious, they had lottery. So there's no longer any foot race after the broken leg incident. So then why would there be this incident? So Allah Alam Dishvichus Damim Kadim. So Gemara says we have to go back to what we suggested previously, that the death incident occurred before the broken leg incident. Now, a death, a murder, look, it's a tragedy, but it's anecdotal. What are the chances that this is going to happen? Anything like this is going to happen again? The Gemara says, no way. So, but then after the broken leg incident, then they realized it's not just anecdotal. And it really is a trend that once you are encouraging competition, competition really does bring out the worst in people. So the murder, which is tragic, so we could have just written that off. But once we see people pushing each other off the ramp, now we realize this is just not good, and that's why they responded with the enactment. Amar Rabbi Tzadok Amala Sa'ulam Va'amar Achena Beis Yisrael Shamu Harehu Omer Ki Yemse Chalam Ve'adama Anan Lo Amila Havi Alayir Ola Zara. So the Gemara goes back to the drusha that was given by Rabbi Tzadok, meaning this is what's going to who's going to bring the Egla Rufa. Now the Gemara gets halachic. The Gemara says Yerushalayim bas asuye Egla Arufa hi. Yerushalayim is a city that's subject to bringing the Egla Rufa. Vatanya Sardvam Nember Yerushalayim. Read the Gemara. Gemara quotes the Gemara at the end of Masechta Sota. 10 things were said regarding the city of Yerushalayim. Vezu achas mehem eino mevia Egla Rufa. The city of Yerushalayim is not subject to bringing the Egla Rufa. Va'od v'lo noda mihi kaukse v'hanoda. Furthermore, right, the question which I'm sure everyone's wondering, you only bring the Egla Rufa when the murderer is not known. We don't know who murdered. Here, we know exactly who murdered. So the Gemara says he was just saying it in order to elicit emotion. Meaning, obviously, the murder was tragedy, but sometimes the message of the tragedy has to be delivered. So what he was doing, he was darshaning, right? A sermon. Right? The rabbi gives a sermon. Okay, it doesn't have to be. I know after the rabbi's sermon, you know, a lot of critics out there in the audience. Well, it happens. Yeah, I'm sure you can relate, and I'm sure you've heard once or twice. But in other words, but basically, no, the drasha, the sermon, doesn't necessarily need to follow halacha kedasu kedin, as evidenced by over here. In other words, the drasha over here is to elicit a feeling, a reaction, an emotion, and it's not meant necessarily to be there as actual halacha. Okay, so the Gemara says that's so you're right. No, there is no Egla Rufa. He was saying that just simply so that people would properly receive what just happened. Now the Gemara noted that the priorities were askew, meaning they had Taharas Kalim, the purification of Kalim, as a more important value then Shvichas Damim. Now, when you're talking about a value and comparative values, the Gemara wonders, Ibailahu. Shvichas Damim hu dezal of Altaris Kalim kedekaima kaima? O demo Shvichas Damim kedekaima kaima of Altaris Kalim hi dechamira? What a difficult question, but such an important question. And in other words, is it that they were off on their Taharis Kalim? But in other words, it was they were over stringent on their Taharis Kalim, but Shvichas Damim they basically had in check, or no? That in their, on their Taharas Kalim, in terms of the proper value, they gave it the proper value, meaning we should be careful about Taharas Kelim, especially in the Beit HaMikdash. It just happens to be that their value, Shfichas Damim, was just so degenerate. They didn't give any value to Shfichas Damim. Meaning, we know one is better, one is more than the other. But which value did they have correct? Tashma mitikarnasav le tamuda. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara is comparing the two. V'gam dam naki shafach menashe and dam naki shafach menashe. Remember, we compared it to the murder that Menashe did. Obviously, he had no value for human life. Shema menashe shvichos dam emud dezal v'taras kelim kedekayma kayma. So the Gemara says it's obvious that in terms of their taras kelim, they were in check. They had the right attitude regarding Taharas Kelim. They had absolutely the wrong attitude regarding Shvichas Damim. Clearly, as the father was trying to remove the blade out of his dying son. Tana Rabbanan. Okay, let's just try to finish up a little bit more for today. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Pasha Rolavash Begadam Achirim Vahutzi Sadeshin. Okay, we have as I described the last number of days, there are two mitzvahs in the Torah. One is Trumas Hadeshen, and the other is Tzatzas Hadeshen. Daily, Trumas Hadeshen. First avoda that's done every day is an avoda. Again, that's the question that keeps coming up again and again. We're going to ask that question again at the end of today's daf. Trumas Hadeshen is removing a shovel full of ash in the early morning it's like the ringing of the bell. It's like the opening of the Beit HaMikdash. And then there's Hotzas Hadeshen, which basically means that after there's an accumulation of ash on the top of the Mizbeach, it has to be removed. Shom'ani kiderech Yom Kippurim sheposha bigdei kodesh v'lovesh bigdei chol, tamalom rufashadas begadav lavash bigadim acherim, mekish begadim shlovesh lebarim sheposhein. Malahalam bigdei kodesh avkan bigdei kodesh. The fact that the Torah says he's changing, but still the Torah says the words bigadim, it means bigdei kahuna. That even though you're doing Hotzas Hadeshen, the removal of the ash, you could make the argument, I'm going to put on my bigadim, my big day kahuna to take out the ash? Yes. Yeah, that's exactly what you're going to do. Imke matam alam racherim acherim. So what does it mean, bigadim acherim? What's acherim? Pchus mehem. Don't take out the new Kohen threads. Take out the older ones. Meaning, go into the closet. Take out an older set of clothing. Don't wear new clothing to take out the ash. But you still have to wear big day kahuna. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Achim, Vahotzi Limin al Kohonim Balimam, Shikshirim Vahotzi Hadeshen. So Rabbi Dosa says, Rabbi Eliezer says that you can even have a Kohen Balimam take out the Deshen, Hotzas Hadeshen. Meaning, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's not an avoda. Balimam, Kohen Balimam obviously is prohibited from doing avoda. So when he says take out the ash, it means it can, Hotzas Hadeshen can be done even by Kohen Balimam. Amar Marachem Pchusim Mehem Kedetan Debei Rav Yishmael. The Gemara quotes another brayse. Kedetan Debei Rav Yishmael. Begadim Shabisha Bahem Kedera Larabo Lo Yimzeg Bahem Kos Larabo. You're wearing clothing when you're in the kitchen cooking, and you're going to be wearing clothing when you're presenting the food. Don't wear the same clothing. Clothing in the kitchen, right? Obviously, they're going to get dirty. So, but when you're presenting the food, so have a new set of clothing. Same thing over here. Otsas Hadeshen should be wearing clothing, but not the same clothing when you're doing the avoda. Now, this is all by Otsas Hadeshen, the removal of the ash. What about Trumas Hadeshen? So Reish Lakish says, same machlokas. And Rabbi Yochanan Amar machlokas b'otzav v'abarama divrei hakol avodahi. And Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with his brother-in-law. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no. Hotzas Hadeshen, cleaning out the ash, removal of the ash, we'll call it disposal, that's a machlokas, whether it's an avoda or it's not an avoda. But Trumas Hadeshen, which is performed daily in the Beis HaMikdash, that's an avoda. Rav Yochanan says that's an avoda l'kulei am according to everyone. So the Gemara says, look, Reish Lakish's argument is, the Torah describes what to wear. What do you wear when you're taking out the deshen? The Torah says, mechnesayim and ketonis. Where's the belt? Where's the hat? Reish Lakish says, how can it be an avoda if you're only wearing two begadim? Rav Yochanan Galer Rechmane Bektonus Mechnasayim V'Odilim Mitznefes V'Avneit, and Rav Yochanan will say, no, you wear all four begadim. Yes, it's true the Torah only mentions two, but who then you will put on the other two? Umayshna Hani. Why does the Torah mention these two? So the Gemara says to Darshan, and we'll finish with this: Midovad Midoke Midaso. The begadim have to be tailored. Okay, you can't wear a beged that's not custom tailored to your height. And mechnesayim has to be put on first. That's a second halacha. So two halachas in terms of why these two garments are mentioned. Number one, tailor-made. Number two, mechnesayim have to be put on first. Ve'reish lakish. Now what's Reish Lakish going to do with this? Mido kemidasa medafke rechmana b'lasha mido. Mido. So Reish Lakish arrives at the same conclusion, but the truth of the matter is, I didn't need these psukim. Just in other words, the words mido. As far as the fact that nothing should go on before the pants should go on first, that is learned from the words al besaro. Okay, so in other words, so Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan are having an argument in terms of, for the Hotzas Edeshin, does a Kohen have to wear four begadim, or can he get away with wearing two begadim? And this is a function of the question of whether or not Hotzas Edeshin is considered an avoda. Rav Yochanan says it's an avoda, therefore his conclusion is that the Kohen has to wear four begadim, and Reish Lakish says no, it's not an avoda, and the Kohen only has to wear Stein. He only has to wear two begadim because, quite frankly, it's not an avoda. And that's by Hotzas Edeshin. Is the same thing going to be true by Truma Edeshin? Once again, a machlok is between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says, Akulei Alma, it is an avoda. And according to Reish Lakish, no, that's also a machlokus between Rabbi Eliezer and the Tanakhama. Okay, we'll stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow.